B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the man talking in your backswing, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. What a bizarre ending to the WGC event in Mexico last week. You had Bryson DeChambeau and Patrick Reed dueling down the stretch for the title. Reed eventually prevailed. But how happy could the tour have been with its two most polarizing personalities in a negative way fighting for the win? I mean, script writers don't make this mistake. You never have two villains and no heroes, right? Anyway, congrats to Patrick Reed and congrats to Victor Hovland on getting his first career win at the event that's held opposite the WGC in Puerto Rico. Now, the three much-heralded rookies who turned pro last May have all found exempt status for 2 years on the PGA Tour. Hovland, his college teammate Matthew Wolff at Oklahoma State, and Colin Morikawa. If these three are any indication, the future looks bright for the game with the young stars. And if there's stuff behind them that's this good, wow. We'll chat about Mexico, Patrick Reed, and more with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. Also today, we check back in with one of my favorite people in golf. Will Lowry first came to prominence as the African-American cross-handed hitting golfer with dreadlocks that dang near won the Golf Channel's Big Break reality show. Since then, he's bounced around a bit on the mini tours, caddied for the stars, shot hoops with Steph Curry, and is currently in the midst of producing a golf reality show of his own called Against the Grain. We'll have plenty of famous names dropped, stories told, and have a serious conversation as well with Will about the current state of race relations in our game. But we kick things off with Ron Green Jr. Let's start with Patrick Reed. He is so dang complicated for me. On one hand, I despise what I can only determine to be a pattern of, shall we say, playing fast and loose with the rules of golf. And I hate that. I find it intolerable. On the other, gosh, I really admire this guy's tenacity under the gun on the course. I mean, he's behind all day, goes out, birdies 15, 16, and 17, creates a two-shot cushion at the last. Sure, DeChambeau three-jacked the 17th. But you cannot argue that Patrick Reed went out and won that tournament.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, as much as DeChambeau lost it, you know, the way he played coming in. But, I mean, you wait. You know, I mean, in a lot of ways, that was what you want a World Golf Championship to be. I mean, you looked at that leaderboard, and you had all these stars sort of packed at the front, and they're sort of going back and forth a little bit. Then when it came time to win, Patrick Reed went and did it. I mean, and you kind of had a sense that might happen. I mean, he's one of those guys, when you look at his record, he knows how to win big, and he just, you know, he did what you have to do, and nobody else could. I mean, we saw Justin Thomas, who I would have probably bet fairly heavily on Sunday morning that he was going to win, just have nothing Sunday afternoon. Same with Rory. And then DeChambeau sort of came apart at the end, and Reed just, you know, the longer it went, the better he looked.
Yeah, we'll get to Rory and Justin Thomas both laying Easter eggs early in just a minute. But back to Patrick just for a second. He's got so much swirling around him. And it occurred to me on Sunday, is he the kind of guy, not unlike some girls we went to high school with, Ron, who seemingly cannot thrive unless there is a maelstrom of drama swirling around them? In other words, if things were calm and happy in Patrick Reed's life, would he not be able to focus like this?
You know, I don't know if we know that because I don't know if we've figured that. It seems like there's always something going. I mean, you know, he started the whole thing all those years ago with the top five player comment at Doral that year. And, I mean, it's just I don't know that any of it is intentional, but I think a lot of it, it certainly has created this, I don't know, storyline or thread through his career that – he does seem to thrive in those situations. I mean, granted, he didn't play well in the Ryder Cup at Paris, but he's not afraid of difficult situations, of putting himself in difficult situations. And, you know, I mean, he has got the sort of punch-and-play answer now about the Bahamas thing that, you know, I just I've said what I'm going to say, and I move on and all that. You got to know he hears about it. It swirls, and but he sort of gets in that cocoon. And I think there's a certain type of player, type of athlete, a person who can get in the middle of those things, and they can sort of narrow their focus and sort of tunnel vision it and tune things out. But there's some level, too, where you know he's sort of pointing a finger at you like, all right, say what you want. Look what I just did.
Ron Granger of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. It seemed to me that everything was starting to die down until there was an incident last week. Full disclosure, Chris Solomon of No Laying Up. It's a friend. He's been on this show several times over the years. He had a conversation with Peter Costas last week. It was eye-opening, to say the least. Peter said there was not one, not two, not three, but four different times that he could recall Patrick Reed playing fast and loose with Improving a Lie over the years. Also, he talked about CBS calling action that had already occurred and how gutless it was. As much as I love Peter Costas, and I do, and I admired his candor in this thing, did he come off sounding just like another bitter, disgruntled ex-commentator?
Well, I think he's always had an edge about him. I mean, that's part of what made him good. He's not afraid to stand there and tell you what he thought when he looked at somebody's swing. Well, the Konica Minolta swing vision, whatever.
Oh, it had a ton of names, yes.
Yeah, and I think that's just his nature. I know doing a story a year or so ago, sitting there with Gary McCord, I was writing something about Gary and talking to Peter, and he goes, well, better go talk to Peter. He was cranky yesterday, but he's cranky every day, Bob, he's a very smart man. I think some of the CBS stuff he said came off as a little bitter, yeah. And I understand he was disappointed. I think he had his feelings hurt. When I talked to him at some point, he was saying he had a plan to sort of work through, I think he said 2021, and then he was going to sort of ride off to the Arizona sunset, but didn't quite work out that way. And, people love to take shots at CBS and how they cover golf tournaments. I think, they probably didn't have their best Sunday at Riviera. I was sort of in and out watching that one and didn't, get a full sense of the flow and all that. But, he certainly took no prisoners when he was talking about Patrick Reed. And, we always talk about wanting people to not sort of talk around the edges of things. Go ahead and tell us what they think. Well, he did. And, he pointed not just the finger, but he pointed to specifics. And, it obviously gathered a lot of attention. Patrick has sort of, done his best to dismiss it. But, he's going to labor with that image for a long, long time, if not for forever. I mean, I think he, I don't know if branded is a fair word, but, he's certainly stained by what has happened.
Well, I've asked you this before, and I'll ask it again. Is there, because these things just keep coming up, is there something that you would say, okay, bud, I've been doing this a long time, been covering this sport a long time, a lot of players. Here's the one thing you need to do. You need to call a press conference and do blank, and this will die down. Are we to the point that there's nothing you can tell him?
I have it on pretty good knowledge that people, in fact, even one or two people in the media said, you need to just sit down and just sort of have the mea culpa here. And just say, look, okay, it ended up looking bad, what I did, and just sort of explain himself and be apologetic and all that. But I think that was overruled, or at least what I was told was overruled in his camp. I'm not sure he might have wanted to do that, but was advised otherwise. I don't know that firsthand, so I probably shouldn't even speculate. But I think to this point, it's hard, you can only put so much sand in that divot right now. I think we'll see what Tom does. I think, he's a very, I don't want to say he's polarizing, because it's strange with Patrick Reed. There's obviously a large number of golf fans who don't want anything to do with him. They're very, very down on him. But to be polarizing, I think you have to have people equally adamant on the other side. And I don't know that you've got any real Patrick Reed fans. Other than his close inner circle. Not the way you'd have a Mickelson or a Ricky Fowler or a Rory McIlroy. You can go back to when Rory and Patrick Reed were paired together in the last day at the Masters, and you sort of got that sense. I think he's a guy who's not given us reason to warm up to it. I don't really know if he cares. I would like to think most of us care. We would like to be liked by people, but I don't think it's a terribly high priority for Patrick. I think he's, you know, he's built around his golf game, and you know it runs a little hot and cold. You know, you watch him play, and he's it doesn't have quite the purity that say Rory or Justin Thomas has sometimes. But boy, he just knows how. I mean, the object of the game is to get the ball in the hole, and he does it so well, and it just. He has a gift, and then, of course, when you've won putt 45 times, it really, really helps.
It always does. Yeah, I don't know if I would call myself.
I don't know if it always does. I've never done that. I won putt 45 times a summer.
Yeah, I don't know if I would classify myself as a fan as much as I mentioned earlier. I admire his tenacity under the gun on a golf course. He's one of those guys that I'm always reminded of my favorite scene in Rocky II, where Apollo Creed's manager is trying to talk him out of the rematch, and Apollo looks at his manager and says, "Why?" And he says, "I saw you beat that man like I never seen a man get beat, and that man kept coming after you, and we don't need that kind of man in our life." And that's Patrick Reed. He just keeps coming after you. And I like I said, I don't know if I wouldn't call myself a fan, but I'm a great admirer of that aspect of him. Ron Green Jr. of the
Globe. Yeah. I agree with what you said. I mean, he's won 8 times down on the PGA Tour. He's won the Masters. He's won 2 WGCs. He's won a playoff event. I mean, he is a handful. I mean, you could let him get going, and all the players sort of have their waves they ride. And when you catch him riding that wave, I mean, he's one of those guys whose name I'm sure they look at when they see it on a leaderboard.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. We mentioned him earlier. Bryson DeChambeau, as far as the tour is concerned, are there two people they'd least like to see atop a Sunday leaderboard going at it than these two? I mean, I was thinking to myself, this is the tour's worst nightmare to have these two guys battling it out.
Well, I think it's awkward in some ways because neither one of them is terribly lovable. And, you know, again, as like a Ricky Fowler or somebody might be. But, you know, they give us something that you want. They give us something different. There's a color to them. There's an edge to them. I mean, there's personality, and even if you view it as prickly or whatever or different, I mean, you know, it's sort of like going back to my childhood watching championship wrestling here in Charlotte. I mean, you didn't want them to all. You couldn't have all good guys. Not that they're bad guys. DeChambeau can be delightful to talk to, and. You know, he's got his own way, and he gets very intense, and, you know, he does it in a sort of unique and uncommon way. But, I mean, there's another guy I think is going to be around for a long time. He's going to win a lot of golf tournaments. If he just doesn't overthink it, but I don't think he can underthink anything.
How much do players pay attention to worthless stats that we love? Like I saw Bryson is now 0 for 6 or 0 for 7 in converting 36-hole leads into victories. Do they know about those things or do they just not care?
I think they know about some of them. They probably know about more of them than they want to. And you know, something like that I'm sure will be brought up enough times to him when he's in post-round press conferences when he has another 36-hole lead, and the question is, well, Bryson, you've had 7 36-hole leads and yet to convert one of those into a victory. Why is that? I mean, they won't be able to escape those questions. You know, I'm sure Tiger knew what his number was closing out tournaments because, I mean, he didn't have to remember but one or two times when he did do it. It made it pretty easy. I think, you know, on the larger scale, I mean, Rory McIlroy knows very well that he hasn't won a Masters yet. He doesn't need to be reminded. But, you know, I would think somebody like Bryson, as analytical and data-oriented as he knows a whole lot of numbers about where he stands.
One more question about Mexico, and we'll move on. You mentioned Tiger a second ago, and thanks for doing that. Justin Thomas went out, laid a huge egg on Sunday. Rory didn't seem to have anything going on Sunday. It just seems to me this is another reminder for all of us to appreciate just how great Tiger was and is at closing the deal. If you watch week in, week out on the PGA Tour, it is rarely done, it seems, that someone has that 54-hole lead and just wins easily on Sunday, if at all.
Well, Tiger, yeah, he made it look not just easy. I mean, it was almost ordained, a foregone conclusion. You turned on Sunday not to watch if Tiger was going to win, but how he was going to win. And, some days, you could just look at Justin Thomas Sunday, and some days we all play golf. You just don't have it.
Yeah.
And nothing you do, and then you hit a shot that's not quite as good as you wanted, and then it kicks into a spot you never want it to be. And, it feels like suddenly, instead of missing the branch, you catch the branch, or it rolls up against the trunk of a tree, and then I think that's what happened to him. I thought Sunday morning Justin Thomas was going to win the golf tournament, but as I've said often enough, I was wrong again. But and then Rory just, I think sometimes he gets pressing a little bit and almost tries too hard. If a couple putts don't go, the kind that sort of set the tone for a round, sometimes it can get going the wrong way for him. But I mean, I have no worries whatsoever about either one of those. I mean, they're going to be right there. They're going to be the names we're talking about as we roll into Bay Hill and the Players and into that other little tournament that's coming up down the road in a few weeks.
Ron Green, Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. You and I had a discussion of the Premier Golf League a couple of weeks ago. At that time, I thought it had a much better chance of happening than you did. Turns out I was loud wrong. You're going to be right on this because that league is dependent upon star power. And we're looking a minimum 2 years down the line, so I can't even count Tiger and Phil. I just can't. The big star is Rory McIlroy, and it seems that Team McIlroy has come out and said, well, maybe someday, but not today.
Yeah, I mean, he basically said, I'm out. I mean, that's a body blow. I mean, it doesn't end it. I mean, it was interesting that Andrew Gardner, the British lawyer who's sort of behind this and pushing it, began his sort of public, campaign to explain what they're trying to do. And I think the players are listening. I think they would. I talked to Charlie Hoffman, who's now going to be the chairman of the Players Advisory Council, and he said, I mean, nobody's taking it lightly. I mean, you'd be naive to just ignore it. But I think what Rory said, wanting to be on the right side of history, I don't think Andrew Gardner of the Premier Golf League says professional golf is broken. I don't think it's broken. Sure, could it be better? Could they get a few more tournaments that maybe get all the top guys together? I mean, that's always been a goal. But I don't think the way to do that is to build it around a team concept. I don't think people really care about team golf. Granted, we haven't had much. I mean, they're going to play the Zurich Classic in a month or so, and it's a two-man team thing, and it will be one of the least watched tournaments of the year. I think it will lead to some kind of evolution on the PGA Tour / European Tour. The players will be able to sort of use this in a way to enhance what they're doing, whether it's purses. I mean, purses are getting ready to go up just ridiculous extreme. It would be very hard to walk away and be told you have to play 18 tournaments a year plus the majors and not really have a whole lot of choice in that. I think that's a big sticking point. And then say you take the chance and you say, all right, I'm gonna go with this. Well, in 2 years, if it flops, then where are you? You're not on the PGA Tour. I mean, Jake Monahan's already said it's us or them. You will make the choice. So I think it's an uphill climb. I think they have some good ideas. I think they're, it never hurts to have competition and to be forced to think a little differently, and I think that's what's happening now. But I just don't see it really ever being what they're suggesting it's going to be.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green, Jr., and when we return, he's one of the greatest name droppers on the planet. Former Big Break contestant, professional golfer and storyteller, Will Lowry takes dead aim at Steph Curry, Vince Carter's golf game, and more, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I first met Will Lowry some 4 or 5 years ago, right after he was on the Golf Channel's reality show, The Big Break. His cross-handed method of playing golf and his dreadlocks make him unique as a golfer, and he's even more unique as a person. Okay, before we get to what you're up to now, okay, in terms of your projects, because I'm always intrigued by what you're working on. The last time you were in here with Christian Havens, who was on The Big Break well.
Yeah.
My favorite thing to talk with you about is you're one of the greatest name droppers of all time. It's amazing how many famous people know Will Lowry and vice versa. And you always go, I didn't get to watch this year, but most of the time at the big celebrity event, out at Lake Tahoe, at Reno Lake Tahoe, you get as much airtime as any professional. Right. Like, Will Lowry is just there in the background.
Right.
I know you were out there this year with Tim Brown. Give me two or three celebrities who you'd never met before who are now Will Lowry disciples because of something that happened out there.
Vince Carter! Vince Carter has become, like, the big bro.
Really?
Vince Carter. So Vince Carter's daughter lives here in Charlotte.
Well, and Vince Carter, if people is still playing in the NBA, he's with the Atlanta Hawks. He is 108 years old.
Yes, he is probably 30 games away from being a full-time golfer. He's a part-time basketball player, full-time professional golfer. That's what he is. So Vince and I, we met at the Tahoe Open or the Reno Tahoe thing up in Tahoe.
Yeah. The celebrity event.
Yeah. And so we hit it off, you know. He's not really, if anybody knows Vince Carter, he's not the most outspoken guy. You know, you have to really find a commonality, and then once that is met, then you guys are become good friends. So he said, "Well, you know, my daughter lives in Charlotte," and so he comes to Charlotte, he gives me a call, he comes to Charlotte, I take him out to Quail Hollow. Great story. Here's a good story. All right.
So you and Vince Carter at Quail Hollow Club.
Me, Vince Carter, and I called Johnson Wagner. I said,
"Oh, okay."
I said, "J Dub, I got Vince Carter with me. Can we come out to the club?" And to see how Johnson reacted. Yeah, I'll be out there. Okay, I didn't really invite you, but okay, cool. You're here, you know.
We just want to use your member number.
Right, in the end. But you know, all kidding aside, yeah, I wanted Johnson to come too because I want him to meet whatever. And so we're out there playing, and Vince has came a long way since the first time I saw him a year and a half ago. And so when I talked to Vince about, you know, just talk about the game, and when you see him playing, you see a essence of like a kid. Like as he was playing, I was asking Johnson, I said, "Johnson, you look at Vince." And we're both looking at Vince. And Vince just had this boyish look on his face. He's happy that he's swinging his 15th shot on this one particular hole, you know. And I said, "Johnson, when was the last time you felt like that on a golf course?" And Johnson and I look at each other, and he's like, "Man, it's been a while, you know." So it's fun playing with these guys, but
Vince has gotten hooked. And here's what I wanted to ask you, two things about that. Number one, it's been my experience being around guys who were athletes in other sports at very high levels. Golf does one of two things to them.
Yeah.
It either frustrates them initially of, "Man, I ain't got time to get mad at myself like this.
Right.
I'm out." Or it hits them the other way of, "This is the next challenge."
Right.
And they have spent their whole life in dedication of becoming special and elite in one sport, that they look at this as a challenge to become special and elite in another, at least in their own mind or around their friends, that they attack it with the same ferocity that they attacked playing basketball at that point.
That is true. And and you say to be elite in their I guess, so-called way of being elite. But these guys, I would say more than half of these guys are trying to maybe go to the senior tour. as far as trying to get the pinnacle of golf.
I think Steph Curry blew people away with how competitive he was last year, at least in round one
of the Korn Ferry Tour event. That's true. Steph is having serious thought of probably, you know, making a run at it when he's done. Like, it's a serious thought. But I poke fun at Steph, and I tell him all the time, I say, you're not the best player in the NBA. And he's like, you know, he gets mad when I tell him.
Who's the best golfer in the NBA?
Man, I would never tell him this to his face.
Who's the best golfer in the NBA?
I would never say it in his face, but I'm saying it now for the purpose of the show. It's Gerald Henderson. Gerald Henderson Jr.
Really?
That's special what he has.
No kidding.
Man, it's special. He's special.
The other thing that I was going to ask you about, especially professional basketball players playing golf, there to me has always been a threshold for golfers and professional quarterbacks in terms of how tall you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, to me, I think the perfect body to be a professional golfer in terms of bulk and size was Ernie Els. I think that God like just came down and said, that's what you should have.
Right.
But anything taller than that, you see really tall guys struggle, whether it be their clubs aren't fitted right for them. That's usually the biggest part of it.
Right.
Or there's so much arc to their swing because they're so big that it's just hard to get everything in sync.
It is hard to get everything in sync, but if you have a teacher that can kind of probably display that language to where they can get understanding, I think that's kind of where they start to realize they have something special over the average 5'9" guy like myself. but Gerald, like Gerald Henderson, going back to Gerald, he has everything. When I say tour quality, everything is solid. I got on the phone with him yesterday. I was like, hey, bro, are you going to get me to the, you know, Masters this year? Because he wants to play in the U.S. Mid-Am.
Yeah.
And I really believe that he can win the U.S. Mid-Am. And I'm like, I want to get to the Masters. So, you know, he's like, man, you know, I got, you know, he's doing real estate stuff. He's also, you know, the commentator for the Hornets. So I'm really trying to get him to, you know, really work hard this summer, but we'll see.
Former Big Break contestant, caddy to the stars, chronic name dropper, Will Lowry is our guest taking Dead Aim. So when you're out there with Tim Brown at the American Century out at Reno, you met him on the Big Break deal where you were partnered with a pro from another sport and whatnot. So y'all have been tight for a while.
Yes.
Explain to people, because they may not understand this, and we were just sort of alluding to it, that guys who get the bug attack it with the same ferocity, and it's because you can't turn off that competitive Jones.
Yeah.
How competitive guys like Tim Brown are, Jerry Rice, former running Marshall Faulk,
uh-huh.
who I've had more than one person tell me, like, you'd rather have played football against Marshall Faulk than golf. That's how intense he is.
Yeah.
But the level of competitiveness that these guys still have, they've just transferred it to golf. Sort of explain how deep that runs.
I mean, well, you got to think when you hear Tim try to cut out on his, and I'm glad this is not going to get too big, but when you hear Tim trying to cut out on his job with the Raiders that he does for the Raiders to go play golf, you know, hey man, I have to get a bucket of balls in. You have to do what? You know, Jerry Rice, hey, man, you know, I'm about to go out to the Cow Club. And I said, oh, you playing 18 holes? No, I'm going to go work out, do my drills, and I'm going to play 18 holes. What drills for what? Man, I got a Monday qualifier in a couple weeks. Monday qualifier? Like, what are you doing? So these guys, man, it's a bit deeper than I think they played 15, 20 years, however, in their respective sport, to prepare themselves to play golf. Like, I think that was their whole goal. Like, I think there was a point in their career, midway through their career, say, hey, you know, I'm going to put myself in position to be financially set to,
so that I can afford to play golf whenever I want to play golf.
I think that's what it is, man. I think that's what it is. Because you should see these guys, man. It's almost like an internal tour, so to speak, because I saw them all at the Diamond Resort down there in Orlando.
Yeah.
And you should hear him say, you know, in a range, the season start. The season start. What are you talking about? Yeah, man, we got, and they consider the Tahoe tournament as their major. So, like, these guys.
Oh my God, that's so great! This is so great.
these guys are preparing themselves for a good year, man. And you got to think they're competing for money too. So I mean, I guess you
stop it. That money's chump change. It's lunch money. That's relative. Those guys don't need the money.
It's chump change to them to point when you hold up a check and everybody else not holding up anything else.
That's what it's about.
That's what it's about.
It's not about
it's not
the
about
deposit.
The money. Right. I agree.
Yeah, no.
I agree. But the fact is that these guys are just stating that, hey, it's the 2020 season. And I can't wrap it fully around my head. The 2020 season for what? for the celebrity hack tour? What? But, yeah, you know, Ray Allen is a good player, too. I don't know if you heard of him.
Yeah, no, I've seen Ray swing.
It's solid. You know, he's I mean,
and that's another tall guy. I mean,
guy.
Just
yeah.
I marvel at the guys who are able to put it together because yeah. I had an experience close to 20 years ago playing in a pro-am in Birmingham with Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
And I was telling my son this story last night that standing on the first tee after watching him warm up on the range, and I was playing in a group. I'm going to drop names like Will Lowry. I was playing in a group that had Vince Gill, Chichi Rodriguez, Cornelius Bennett, Charles Barkley, and then me.
Nice. Nice.
And we had and this is in Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
So Cornelius Bennett, Alabama guy. I'm just, it's
playing
big.
It's playing to Vince Gill. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Country music singer. Also big in Alabama.
Right, right.
But our gallery is 3 to 5 deep.
Right.
And after seeing Charles warm up on the range, all I can think is somebody's going to lose their life today.
Right.
And they don't know it yet.
Right.
Because it
right.
was that scary and that dangerous.
Right.
And so to see that for 18 holes mm-hmm. and then to see Ray Allen and some of these other guys that are big, tall guys that just yeah. have these beautiful swings, I get knocked out.
Yeah, man. And these guys take it serious, man. You should see how Ray Allen sets his station up before he go play, like his hitting station on the driving range. I mean, it is tour stuff. He has his alignment markers. He has his camera. He has his friends holding a camera every which way. Swing video. Takes one swing. Get this. He takes one swing, goes back and look and analyzes the swing, and says, yep, that was the problem, and goes back and swing. Blows my mind every time. Blows my mind.
Name dropper of the Stars, caddy to the Stars, former Big Break contestant Will Lowry, our guest taking dead aim. Before we get to what you're doing now, one more name I want to drop, mm-hmm. just because I was laughing the other day when Will said, hey, I'm going to send you some videos. And I thought they were swing videos of something. No, he sends me videos of him playing one-on-one with Steph Curry. What's going on there? And it looked like it was taken out in California.
Yeah, yeah. So Steph is... doing some, he has some verticals going on as far as trying to promote the game of golf. And, you know, he's asked me just kind of help him out on some things as far as how he can really target specific demographic and growing the game. And so I'm giving my opinion of, you know, how I can help and how, you know, how he should position himself. And, but, you know, with that being said, I was out there for the AT&T Pro-Am, did a couple programs, shake some hand, kiss some babies, and I went to go stay at his house, whatever. And we went to the game. I think it was the Lakers game that night. And so we you know, had a good time, front row seat. Steph took care of me, had a great time. And we went back to the to where the practice facility.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool, you know, being back there, taking a couple of shots, you know, on the NBA court. And, you know, Steph said, well, let me see what the jump shot looks like. And obviously, I made mine, of course.
Of course.
And I said, hey, you know, obviously, you know, when I play golf, you want my best. He said, yes, all the time. I said, when you get healthy, I want your best on a basketball court. I just want to see it one time. And the competitor that he is, well, you can get that right now.
You want some. Step to the plate.
So I wasn't fully prepared, but I wasn't going to say no. I wasn't going to turn down a challenge. And we played first 1 and 3. I scored a first bucket, and that was all she wrote. And he went 3 straight. It made me fall in the process. It went viral a little bit, so yeah.
Who does that? Who's in the world of golf and winds up shooting hoops with Steph Curry after a basketball game while he's still on the injured list? He's one of my favorite people in the game. Professional golfer, caddy to the stars, storyteller, and name dropper, the one and only Will Lowry. And up next, we take dead aim at a couple more serious topics, including the state of race relations in our game. Presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
We're taking dead aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, and we continue now with former Big Break contestant and professional golfer Will Lowry. Last time you were in here, you were with Christian Havens, two African American guys who had been on the Big Break on the mini tours. Y'all were working on a project. We'll get to that project in a second. Every time you're in, I like to ask this question. Part of me is always hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Where are we now with this game that we love in terms of race?
The numbers tell us, you know, I use this stat all the time. You know, the National Golf Foundation conducted a study that amongst, I'm talking about African-Americans, 17% of African-Americans were participated in the introductory level of golf. That's your first seed programs, your Boys and Girls Club, and a few others out there. And as we move up in the golf competitive market, as far as collegiate golf, 0.5% of African-Americans are participating. So that's just, there's a significant fall off from 17% to 0.5%. So why is that? That's the question. That's the $100 million question. And I think we all have the answer. But how are we going to implement our ideas and our programs to kind of increase that participation?
Well, see, that's the thing. Maybe we do know the answer, but part of me is maybe I'm being ignorant because I'm thinking, okay, we've got them when they're kids at 17%. We've got them at say, 8 to 10.
Right.
We're losing them between 10 and 18.
Right.
Where are we going right between 8 and 10 that we're not going right between 10 and 18?
I think that model can be looked at as where are we going right between 8 and 18 with basketball? Because if you look at it, there's AAU programs out there. There's coaches knocking on kids' door to get them in position to get into college. But we don't have that same thing when it comes to golf. And the thing is that that's one thing that Steph is really passionate about. How can we attack that that particular competitive market and increase the participation numbers? And he has a lot of things coming up. He has a lot of ideas and programs. He partnered with Callaway, and I think with the next, I want to say 24 months, we're about to see a significant change. And the bad part, it's good and bad, so to speak, but the fact that this basketball player is about to make a big kaboom, so to speak, over some of the players that are already in the game and are aware of the situation.
I was encouraged. You and I reconnected a couple of weeks ago. At a random driving range, by the way. But you were sort of overseeing a young African-American teenage girl. And when I saw that, I was encouraged just because I don't see that very often.
Right.
And I go to a lot of junior tournaments. I have a junior golfer. You know him. I see a lot of the girls. I don't see a lot of African-American girls. And I saw her, and I went, okay, perhaps this is progress. What have we done right with this girl? And how can we, you know, it obviously is something that looks cool to her.
Right, right. Well, and the thing about it is, you know, she kind of caught the want and the need for to get out of the 17%. She wants to go higher, you know. But fortunately, she has somebody there that wants to guide her and get her prepared for that next level. And the thing is that, you know, she has goals of dreams of being of the next Annika Sorenstam, and you know she really knows the history about the game, and so she just said, "Will, can you help me get to a 4-year college?" Now my goal is, I don't want to say I'm a teacher, but my goal is to guide him as far as I can take him, and then help him find that teacher that can really get him over the hump. But I just don't want them to get lost in that system. I don't want them to say, "Hey, well, I can't find anybody to help me for right now. I don't know where to go. My parents don't have the bandwidth of finding help. So that's how to get lost in playing basketball, you know, playing another sport. But at this time, I really want, you know, I really want to, you know, help guide and mold her. And I'm sure there's other students that are in the same situation. But the goal is just to put your hands on them so we can help them out.
So that's a long answer to we're better than we were 5 years ago, but we're not near where we need to be.
The women's game is growing.
Yeah.
You know, there was a stat that women comprise of 25% of every male golfer, I want to say, which is a significant increase over the last 5 years. So the women game is growing. The minority African-American women's game is still at a standstill. But through the art of social media, you start to see a lot of young kids are out there trying to, you know, get better at the game of golf, too. So I'm starting to slowly get more followers as far as a young black lady here, a young black kid here. So, you know, obviously I got my eyes on them. So definitely going to be part of the verticals that I got going on.
Former Big Break contestant, caddy to the stars, modern-day Bagger Vance, Will Lowry is our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, so let's get back to the project. You and Christian were in here a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. the last time that we talked on the show, and you guys were sort of shopping what I thought was a really interesting TV mm-hmm. project, sort mm-hmm. of a reality show situation. Mm-hmm. Hadn't talked to you since then. Is that project dead? What are you working on now? Because I know that you've got a TV project in the mm-hmm. works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the project, man, we have so many. One of them is Against the Grain. It's a project.
That's
about,
the one.
Yeah, about following the journey of the 12 minority golfers who are trying to get on PGA Tour. We have it picked up by Buna Murray, which is Anthony Anderson Production Company, and we are in the midst of looking for sponsors as far as paying for production. So Netflix is taking a liking to it. We have a lot of distributors, but we're still trying to find that the production dollars, so to speak.
Yeah.
So,
the good news is, as far as sports content, which mm-hmm. is what you're delivering, mm-hmm. good God, there's FS1, right. FS2, right. ESPN 1 through 12,
right.
CBS right. Sports Network.
Right.
I mean, there's so many golf channels. There's
right.
golf TV.
That's true.
The PGA Tour is launching their own app. It seems to me that, as opposed to 2 years ago, there are so many avenues mm. who are dying for content mm. that the chances of you finding distributorship are much better than they were back then. Am I just throwing that out there?
You're making it obvious. It would seem as if it would be easier, but not yet. And that's what's that question here. That's what has everybody befuddled.
Okay, and I hate to throw this back in uh-huh. there. Is there a race component to it? Because to me, this would be compelling TV.
Man, you're asking all the right questions. Is it a race component? I may have to say yes. Like I said.
Now, is that just a yes because of your lifelong experience? Or is that a yes of, as I'm observing this through a modern prism, I can't believe I'm running into this, but I am?
Yeah, it's to the latter. Because...
Okay.
When it makes sense and it's not going through, that's what had me questioning it. It makes all the sense. There's times where I've been to certain companies where they say, "Man, there's 15 minority golfers, huh, playing professionally on a black golf tour. Man, you can't make this up. This is perfect. Well, let's come to a deal." And before you know it, we'll follow up. We'll see, we'll see what happens. And before you know it, it kind of fades to black a little bit. Like I said, some of the mainstreaming companies said, "We'll love to air this on our show, but we're not paying for it," and that's kind of where we are. So I'm trying to reach out to Dix. If anybody know anybody at Dix, that'd be huge right now. trying to reach out to Dix and some of the major, corporations, see if they want to get behind it, but we have an A-lister behind it. I'm seeing if I can possibly get Steph Curry behind it as well, and we can see where we'll go from there for sure.
Okay, we were talking in the last segment about how we've got a professional basketball ball player, Steph Curry, who's doing more to advance uh-huh. minorities in the game of golf than anybody in the game of golf. I'm not saying anything bad because I have nothing bad to say
right.
about Harold Varner.
Right.
I have nothing bad to say about
right.
Tiger Woods, but and especially Tiger at this point. Tiger could get anything done with that sound, okay? Why is it that he's reticent?
I don't know. But it's almost a point to where the fact that he has reservations over is one thing, but it's, his reservations are almost to the point is eerie. I don't know if you saw the, I want to say maybe it was the PGA Championship, his press conference. There was a reporter asked him about his new adventure as far as in media. I think the golf.
Golf TV.
Golf TV is his. And the reporter said, don't quote me on the per se, but he said, you know, your movement towards minority golfers and content, will you jump into that space? And Tiger, man, it was almost, he saw a ghost. Man, he went 180 on that report.
It almost reminded me, and I know what you're referring to, but his attitude almost reminds me of when Michael Jordan was asked in his prime about why he didn't speak out on certain things. And
right.
his, you know, his answer was something along the lines of Republicans spend money
right,
too.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I guess where both are coming from, but Tiger, it's not like Tiger's going to lose
right.
status.
You're right.
And I mean, and I'm not jumping on Harold. Harold may not have the wherewithal in terms of the stroke and the financial stroke at this point to really get it going. So I'm not much. But I could see once it got going, you could get Harold Varner's involvement because he's on your phone.
Yeah. Harold always said he'd help out. He's a big component of some of the talent that we have on the show, and he knows all of them. We have this big group chat, very encouraging. Harold is, and he's growing the game himself. You know, he's doing certain other activations, so to speak, to really promote the game. Everybody be all inclusive. He's doing something with the North Carolina Junior AM, I believe, providing a free entry or free membership. Don't quote me on everything, but he's doing his part. So you know, And, you know, some people want their respective lanes. And as long as they're trying to grow the game, I'm all for it. It's just that there's certain pies and pockets that I choose to be in. And hopefully can make something happen out of it, for sure.
He is a complex and fascinating person in the game of golf and 100% real. One of my faves. That's former Big Break contestant and professional golfer Will Lowry. I'd also like to thank our friend Ron Green. I'd also like to thank our friend Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for his time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, BPod Studios, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there now. Links to articles on the latest is goings on in and around the game. Hey, weather-wise, Chamber of Commerce for this time of year, I'm telling you, in the Carolinas. Little chilly in the morning, but plenty of opportunity for teeing it up and letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And I'll tell you what, if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golf guy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.